Okay, thank you. I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me to give a talk in this conference. And in this talk, I will describe the structure of the scattering amplitude for smooth, compactly supported perturbations of the Laplacian. In particular, I will prove that the scattering amplitude quantizes a certain canonical relation in the sense of semi-classical Fourier integral operators, which I will make precise. So let me begin by describing the setting in which I will work. It is the following. I consider a smooth manifold X of dimension n greater than 1, such that X coincides with Rn on the complement of the ball centered at 0, radius R0 in Rn, where R0 is a fixed positive number. And I consider a smooth Riemannian metric on X such that G also coincides with the Euclidean metric outside this ball. And I consider the family of operators, semi-classical family of operators, 1/2 h squared, the Laplacian with respect to G plus V, where V is a smooth, compactly supported, real-valued function on X, such that the support of V does not intersect the complement of this ball. Yes, all the perturbations are smooth contained inside the ball. Positive Laplacian, yes. Right, so these operators are self-joint with common domain D. H2 with respect to the volume form induced by the metric on X. Okay, so the scattering amplitude then is defined in the following way. We know that for every theta on the sphere and for every lambda positive, there exists a unique function psi depending on theta, lambda, and h locally in the domain such that P of h minus lambda psi is 0, and psi has the following form. Where chi is just the cutoff, so chi is a compactly supported function Rn, real valued chi is equal to 1 on the ball, and such that psi scattering satisfies the Sommerfeld radiation condition at infinity, which is R. we, and norm not to be confused with the other norm, goes to infinity. Okay, and then psi has an asymptotic expansion. And when I don't try the subscript, tell me in the Euclidean norm here. And the function A is called the scattering amplitude. Which is the object which I will study in this talk. And now the scattering amplitude is also multiplied by some constant depending on the dimension, the energy, and H, is also the kernel of identity minus the scattering matrix at that energy, which I will not really define, but just to say that for that reason, because of its relation to the scattering matrix, it has been studied extensively by a lot of authors, and I would like to mention a few of them. First, Weinberg in 76 studied the case of the semi-classical Euclidean Laplacian plus right, so here I just mean the Euclidean Laplacian, so with a minus sign is positive. The Riemannian Laplace Fermi operator is positive with a plus sign. Okay, so Weinberg studied the case of a smooth compactly supported perturbation of the Laplacian at energy lambda greater than the supremum of V. And he established an asymptotic expansion of the scattering matrix of the form some symbol E to the I over H as J, where so he does this for fixed omega and theta on the sphere. Actually, I'm sorry, he does this for fixed omega and allows theta to vary in the neighborhood on the sphere. And the SJ's suitably modified actions along the trajectories of the system, and the AJ's are symbols which he computes explicitly, and the number N is the number of trajectories with initial direction omega and final direction theta. And all of this he does under the assumption that theta is non-degenerate for omega, which I will make precise a little later. So this implies that there are only finitely many such trajectories. Yes, sorry. AJ. SJ, yes, also, and AJ depends on. Okay, so it also depends on age, but I'm just not my notation is good. Okay, so also Guinean in 77 studies seismic perturbations of the Laplacian and establishes a similar asymptotic extension under the same assumption, under the assumption that there are finitely many theta and omega trajectories. Also, Maida in 76 studies scattering for the wave equation and establishes a similar asymptotic extension. In 82 Protus studies the structure of the scattering amplitude for the same setting as in Weinberg's paper and establishes an asymptotic extension in terms of canonical Maslow operators, which is rather different. In 87, Yajima studies the structure of the scattering matrix for potential perturbations of the Laplacian with V satisfying an estimate of this form. And should be smooth. Real valued, but not necessarily compactly supported. But his results only valid in L2. And in 89, Robert and Tamura also studied the case of potential perturbations satisfying this condition and established an asymptotic expansion similar to this. And in 2001, so they do it for non-trapping energies. In 2001, Michel has done it for trapping energies under certain conditions, certain assumptions on the resonances of the system. So most of these authors established, except for... Yes, all of these authors, except for Guillemin, who does it for compactly supported metric perturbation. He doesn't have a potential perturbation, just a compactly supported metric perturbation. Right. So all of these, most of these authors establish similar asymptotic expansions for the scattering amplitude, and such asymptotic expansions motivate the conjecture that the scattering amplitude has the structure of the Fourier integral operator, and why exactly, I will say a little later. So this is what I will prove here, that the scattering amplitude in this setting has the structure of semi-classical Fourier integral operators, and for that I will use the following representation of the scattering amplitude. Okay, where? E plus minus of the operators which to the following chi1, chi2, so smooth functions with compact support and Rn real valued such that chi1 is equal to 1 on the ball. Chi2 is equal to 1 on the support of chi1. And so J tilde are also smooth functions with compact support. Sorry? Yes. Well, eventually they don't because I apply these operators, E plus minus, so they map this onto the sphere. Oh, yeah, F, yes, this is on Rn. Oh, right, but these have support outside of the perturbation. So these are applied to this function which has support outside of the perturbation, which is Rn. Where is x? Here? Oh, to the sphere. Sorry.
No, so we apply to the sphere, so what we apply to?
So E minus acts on this part, E plus acts on this part. Okay. So, these functions are such that chi1 tilde is equal to 1 on the support of the gradient of chi1. So, for both of them. And they have disjoint support. And lastly, R sub lambda H is the meromorphic continuation of the resolvent of here. I have. So this cutoff resolvent is the meromorphic continuation of the cutoff resolvent from the upper half plane to the lower half plane. Okay, and K denotes the Schwarz kernel of this operator. Okay, so this is the representation of the scattering matrix, which I will use to prove its structure, namely that it is a Fourier integral operator. So let me tell you what I will mean by a Fourier integral operator. And for that, I need the manifold M with dimension K, smooth manifold. And I consider a Lagrangian submanifold of the cotangent bundle to M. And I will say that U is a Fourier integral distribution, semi-classical Fourier integral distribution of order R associated to the Lagrangian submanifold lambda. If U satisfies estimates of the form, it is big O of H to the power N minus R minus the dimension over 4. In the L2 sense, when I apply N plus 1 two differential operators to it, which are such that the principal symbols, such that the symbols are compactly supported, and the principal symbols vanish on the Lagrangian. And the last condition only needs to be satisfied for J from 1 to N. Okay, so this will be the definition of a Fourier integral distribution. And I will prove that the scattering amplitude satisfies such estimates. But for that, I need to define the Lagrangian submanifold lambda to which it will be associated. K is the dimension of M. Little k is the dimension of M.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. It's a little k. Oh, the big K up there? This one? This is the Schwarz kernel. I just mean the Schwarz kernel of this operation. Okay, so I need to define the Lagrangian submanifold, which will be quantized by the scattering amplitude in this sense. And this Lagrangian submanifold, which I will call the scattering relation, is defined near non-trapped trajectory of the system. And to define that, let me say first that I will make the following assumption on the energy lambda. I will assume that the principal symbol of my operator is such that t equals lambda implies that dp is not equal to zero. This implies that the energy surface t equals lambda is a hypersurface, so 2n minus 1 dimensional submanifold of sister of R. Okay. And the integral curves of the Hamiltonian vector field of P are called the trajectories. And the non-trapping, if they leave every compact set in finite time. So the system may have, well, this system always has some non-trapping trajectories, and I will work near non-trapped trajectory in this sense. And the scattering relation then is defined in the following way. So if this ball contains the support of the perturbation outside of the ball, uh, the trajectories are straight lines inside of the ball, they do something, and non-trap trajectories leave the ball. And the incoming part of the trajectory has some direction, which I will call theta. And taking the tangent to this ball at theta, intersecting it with the incoming part of the trajectory, I have a point, so which I can call px. And I can identify the incoming part of the trajectory with a point on the cotangent bundle to the sphere by identifying it with the point theta px. And I will do the same for the outgoing part of the trajectory. It has some direction, and the outgoing part of the trajectory intersects this tangent plane at some point py. And the direction is omega, and I identify this with the point omega py. In the cotangent bundle of the sphere. And the scattering relation is simply the graph of this map, which maps the incoming part of a non-trap trajectory to its outgoing part, both identified with points in the cotangent bundle to the sphere in this way. And this graph turns out to be a canonical relation, which I will call the scattering relation. So this is the relation which I will prove that the scattering amplitude quantizes in this sense over there. So for that, I need to verify that it satisfies this estimate. And so I will begin with taking AJs, which are symbols, and So I assume that these have an asymptotic expansion. Principal symbols which vanish on the scattering relation. So I'll just call this, as I said, the scattering relation. I'll denote it in this way. Another A0, which simply smooth compass point. Okay, so then I want to see what happens to this. I say that I will use this representation of the scattering amplitude, and at this point I will also use a generalization of Egorov's theorem. To manifolds of unequal dimension. And this implies that this is equal to the constant phase. This implies that I can more or less commute
these operators, E plus minus,
we the operators which quantize the AJs, but I don't have the AJs here. I have different symbols, BJs, which I will tell you what they are. Okay, where the BJs
also smooth, but they are now supported in the cross engine bundle of Rn cross itself, and they are such that restricted to another Lagrangian submanifold, they vanish, where this Lagrangian submanifold is the graph of the Hamiltonian flow of P restricted to the energy surface over all T. And this is all local, so really, again, we are working near non-trapped trajectories. It follows from the definition of the AJs, BJs inherit this property. Okay, so now if I can prove that this expression to the right of this satisfies estimates of this kind, I will have the result that I want. And again, by commuting these operators with these commutators with the Laplacian, every time gaining a power of h, we see that it is sufficient to prove that the cutoff resolvent satisfies estimates of this kind. And this is what I will do now. And there are two main ideas. There are two main ideas in the proof that the cutoff resolvent is a semi-classical Fourier integral operator associated to this Lagrangian, and they are the following. The first is a representation, it's a well-known representation of the resolvent in terms of unitary group. UT is the unitary group of the operator. Okay. And the second idea is that for every one of the BJs, since they vanish on lambda sub r, we have the expression Bj equals Cj plus P minus lambda tends to 1. Cj plus 1 tends to P minus lambda Bj, where the CJs vanish on another set, the union of lambda T, where lambda T is the graph. Of the Hamiltonian flow of P at time t. And this is also graph here. Okay, and all these are compactly supported, smooth compactly supported. Okay, so now we can write the BJs as quantizations of these expressions, and gaining a power of h each time, we can write the quantizations of these products as the product of the quantizations of each one of these symbols. And we will have expressions of the form P minus lambda tensor identity applied to the Schwarz kernel of the cutoff resolvent. And this turns out to, excuse me, this turns out to actually, so if we apply n of them, this turns out to give us big O of h to the n, simply writing simply using the fact that R of lambda is the resolvent of P minus lambda. So this gives us that. For the other side, we obtain the same thing, using the fact that the Schwarz kernel of this operator is actually symmetric. It turns out to be smooth and symmetric. So we obtain the same thing. And when we apply the CJs quantized, to the kernel of the resolvent, using this representation, we are really applying it to the kernel of the Schwarz kernel of the unitary group. And now we use the fact that the unitary group is the Fourier integral operator. This is a well-known fact, that the unitary group is a Fourier integral operator of order 0 associated to lambda t. And this gives us another big O of lambda 2, big O of h to the n in the L2 sense. And so we will also have products of these kinds of operators, and the idea is to try to commute them so that we first apply operators of this kind, and then we apply the quantizations of the CJs, and every time we commute, we gain a power of h from the commutators, from the calculus of pseudo-differential operators. And in this way, we basically prove the result. And we obtain that the scattering amplitude satisfies estimates of this kind, and therefore it is a semi-classical Fourier integral distribution associated to the scattering relation. Okay, so I guess the last thing I would like to say is how this relates to the earlier results of all this authors. Okay, so as in the classical case where the classical case in which h is equal to 1, we can prove that Fourier integral distribution can be written in the form e to the I over h c of x theta a of x theta d theta as an oscillatory integral where phi is a non-degenerate phase function which parameterizes lambda in the sense that lambda equals lambda c, where lambda c is this manifold. And this relates to the asymptotic expansion proved by these orders, which is why this asymptotic expansion suggested that the scattering amplitude may be a Fourier integral operator in general. So we know this for every, so this is an if and only if statement, which we can prove in the semi-classical case, and the proof is a little different from the proof in the classical case due to the fact that in the classical case the Lagrangian submanifolds are away from the zero section. In the semi-classical case they don't need to be, so that makes it a little different. And so here A is some symbol. The order of A depends on the order of U, but maybe twice after time I'll say how. And so if I can prove, which I can, that these actions, the SJs, parameterize the scattering relation, then I will have by this result that the scattering amplitude has an asymptotic expansion of this form. And this is the place where I have to make the non-degenerate assumption made by all these authors. And the assumption is the following. So we again look at the non-trapped trajectory, which has some incoming direction and some outgoing direction. Well, they seem to be the same here, but they're not the same in general. Okay, and so if the incoming direction is theta and the outgoing direction is omega, and this is lambda theta, the non-degeneracy assumption is the following. So if we have theta fixed and psi infinity of z theta is the outgoing direction where z is the point on the tangent plane to the sphere at theta, then omega is called regular for theta. If for every z at which the outgoing direction is omega, this determinant is not zero. Okay. And having made this assumption, we can define the actions. Over integral curves of the Hamiltonian field is P, Hamiltonian vector field is P, in the following way. We have to modify the actions suitably so that they're finite. And the way we do this, the way we define the action, so this assumption implies a lot of things. In particular, it implies that these actions can be made functions of theta and omega only. And so they also imply that we have finitely many theta omega trajectories. So we'll call that number capital L. And so for L, for little l, one of them, we define the action as the modified action. So the modified this way. And here we have the integral of the Legendrian. Let me just give you, without explaining all the symbols, just explain what I mean by all this. So YL is a point on the L's trajectory somewhere here in a small neighborhood of this point near the tangent, without explaining all the details. Little t is large enough so that the trajectory has already left the perturbation at time t. And xl, so yl is here, xl is yl flown for time t. So it is also outside. And s varies, s is also, time varies in the small neighborhood such that yl stays here. And so how do we prove that SL parametrizes the scattering relation in this sense? Well, we simply take the derivative, but it's not really quite so simple. But we take the derivative, we look at the differentials of SL with respect to theta and omega. And this point here turns out to be the differential with respect to theta. This point here turns out to be the differential with respect to omega of SL. And to be able to take the differentials, we again have to use this assumption several times and decide that by smoothness, this derivative doesn't vanish in the neighborhood and so on. But I guess I have to stop here. And it's really just the computation. So that's it. Okay, thank you for your attention.